Our next guest is on the road, which is fitting because he has a presentation of Freeway Mazda. It's Dan Murphy here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Murph?
What's going on, fellas? I'm a commuter this morning.
How's the drive?
It's good. Yeah, driving out to Abbotsford. The sun's starting to peek through. There hasn't been any traffic. I did hear on the updates that there was an accident in Abbotsford, but it was going west. So hopefully it'll be all smooth sailing all the way out.
So the Canucks are going to hit the ice soon in Abbotsford. They're going to be down seven, I'll call them familiar faces. Obviously, Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes at the top of that list, but Horvat's not going to be there, or at least he wasn't yesterday. Sutter, Hamonic, Bailey, Mott. So it's going to be a collection of new faces, and there's going to be some old faces missing. What are you kind of zoning in on or focusing in on, Murph, as you head out to Abbotsford for the first day officially of on-ice training camp stuff?
Well, for me, hopefully Horvat's there. I know he was feeling under the weather yesterday, and they were taking precautions, but I would say that, you know, Travis Green, the way he sets up camp a lot of times is predictive of what he wants to do. So if he sees something he likes, the way he sets it up early, he tends to stick with it. Case in point, Hoglander last year. So one thing I'm really interested to see is who is going to be on Bo Horvat's wings. That's kind of one thing at camp that I think with no Pettersson and no Hughes at this point, that's one thing I'm very interested in. Will it be Garland? Will it be Hoglander again? Will Pearson be up there? Because I think pretty much when Green goes with something and he likes it, he sticks with it straight through. So if Horvat's there, that's kind of one thing I'll look at. And I do want to see how Ekman-Larsson looks, what the defensive pairings might be as well. And, you know, I don't think there's a lot of camp battles in terms for roster spots, but you know, we know the third defensive pair, the left side, we have to have a look at. We also want to see who might be on the fourth line, who has a leg up in that, if there's any dark horses. So there's a few things I want to check over the next couple days.
How much does the absence of Hughes and Pettersson and a few other guys throw a wrench into Travis Green's training camp plans?
I think it's a huge wrench. I mean, you heard him talk about it yesterday, especially being down. Pettersson for sure, Sutter for sure, and Horvat maybe. Well, there's three of his four centers right there. So you're not going to get a very good look at lines or chemistry or what you might want to try when you don't have three of your projected starting centers. So I think that more than anything throws a wrench in. And you know, I thought that he was pretty diplomatic yesterday. Being a former player, he knows these things happen. But as a coach, he certainly wants guys there for the entirety of camp. He wants them available for the preseason. He wants them to be able to hit the ground running and to have a good start because, let's face it, last year in the shortened season, they had a terrible start and they were never able to catch up. So I think it throws quite a big monkey wrench into his plans, actually.
We're speaking to Sportsnet's Dan Murphy here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Murph is on his way out to Abbotsford for the start of on-ice stuff at training camp from Abbotsford. We focused a lot on the players, Murph, obviously, but I want to stick on Travis Green here for a sec. Every time I look at this and then say it out loud, it blows my mind. He is the seventh longest tenured head coach in the NHL right now. The only guys that have been at their jobs longer are John Cooper, Paul Maurice, Jeff Blashill, Mike Sullivan, Jared Bednar, and Bruce Cassidy. That's it. So by NHL standards, Green is a well-tenured and a veteran head coach. With all that said, how important is this season for Travis Green? Because there's that looming specter of how bad last year was. There's the anticipation that on paper this team is going to be better. And if it's not, oftentimes, as we know in the NHL, if the expectations fall short, it's the head coach that bears the brunt of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's pressure. I know he has some term now on his contract. You guys can tell me if you're wrong, but I think that the year in the bubble, I mean, Green got a fair amount of praise for his coaching, for his tactics, for the changes he made in those series. And he was, given credit where credit was due. I don't think I heard a lot of people blaming Green for last season. Certainly, he'll take some of it, but for the most part, I think it was circumstances, injury, and this is what I'm just saying what most people felt. The blame was not really put on his shoulders. Now, that said, he's got a really good-looking forward group. He's got a defense that he thinks is much better. He's got a defenseman, an OEL, that he thinks is his replacement for Edler in terms of a guy that's going to play 23, 24 minutes a night. So I think with the pieces he has now, there's heat on the coach to perform. Now, not that there wasn't pressure before, but I think that with all the chips in the middle from the GM is looking squarely at the coach as well. And you're right. I mean, if something changes in a season, it's usually the coach. He does have protection with the contract, but I think this is really where the pressure ramps up for Travis Green.
What do you think how do you think he wants the Canucks to play? Because we were discussing this earlier.
Well.
Thank you, Halford. Why don't you just turn your mic off for a little bit?
Done.
Okay. Because they need to be better defensively. I don't think anyone disagrees with that. But I don't think they want to be a quote-unquote, like, conservative defensive team, especially not with their forward group, because their forward group is arguably the strength of their team. So it's kind of a fine balance there where you don't want to tell your defenseman, like, okay, both of you guys stay back. You're not joining the rush because you're playing defense and only one man in on the forecheck because we're going to keep a bunch of guys back. But at the same time, there's no doubt the Canucks have to be better structurally than last season, where at times, frankly, they look like a beer league team out there.
Yeah. I think that they last year at times they played a system that he probably didn't want to play, probably tried to dumb it down, tried to play defensive hockey to keep games low scoring, because at the beginning, remember, it was fire wagon hockey to start, especially some of those games against Montreal. So I do think that, you know, obviously structurally they want to be better defensively, but I do think he always says they want to play a fast game. Now, you don't have to be fast to play fast, but it certainly helps. And they have some better skaters, some quicker players, some faster players this year. I think he wants to be a transition team. I think he wants to be a team that moves the puck up the ice quickly and make plays that way. I also think he wants to be a more direct team when it comes to forechecking and puck retrieval. And I think that you're going to see the makeup of his lines in reflecting that, in terms of having some guys finally that will go to the net, will go to the corners in the Podkolzins, the Dickinsons, the Garlands. So, I, you know, he always says play a direct game, but I think they want to be a transition team. I think they want to play fast. I think they want to get the puck up ice to forwards and let them go to work. That's easier said than done. But, you know, some things you can say about OEL, he has been a pretty good at puck retrieval in his career. Quinn Hughes is certainly good at that. Hamonic is fairly solid at that. Rathbone is an offensive thinker. So I think they have the defenseman to play the offensive type of game he wants to play. Whether they can play structurally defensively when they need to remains to be seen.
Yeah, the forecheck is going to be interesting to watch, because I hope at least that they're a faster team in the bottom six than they were last season. I'm curious to see if Will Lockwood makes an impression, because his game is forecheck. It's kind of like that relentless puck pursuit type of game. He's kind of a dark horse in my mind to make the team, especially with Tyler Mott being out. How long is Mott supposed to miss? Do you know anything about that, Murph?
Well, I mean, Benning just said yesterday that they hope he's ready for the first game of the regular season. To me, that screams that they're certainly not optimistic that he'll be ready for then. He's not going to skate with the main group. My understanding, he is rehabbing. I don't know if he's on ice yet by himself or with some injured players. But if the Canucks are saying they're hoping for October the 12th or the 14th? I don't even know. 12th? I would think it's probably that's very, very ambitious. Conservatively, perhaps I would say probably a week or two after that. But I haven't had any conversation with Mott since his surgery, so I can only go by what the team has said.
How much catch-up are you going to have to play over the course of this training camp? Because, you know, Bruff and I were talking about it this morning, trying to remember exactly who is in charge of the Canucks power play right now. We're like, you know, you just don't have the same media availability that you used to. You're not around the rink. You're not talking to guys on a daily basis. Everything last season and in the offseason was done via Zoom. And in your case, not only do you need to kind of get up to speed with, all the guys on the Canucks roster and the new coaching staff and everything. There's an entire American Hockey League team that is now in your backyard. So I think, I would imagine you're going to be even more responsible to know the ins and outs of the AHL Canucks as well. So there's a lot, I would guess there's a lot of catching up to do over the course of the next 48 to 72 hours.
Oh, for sure. But the one thing that's good is that the Canucks are trying to make it more normal. It's not going to be Zoom interviews. There are stations to do your interviews, you know, safely, socially distanced, but with the boom mic, so you can at least see the players face to face. You can talk to them, you can chat with them, and that's kind of the stuff I really missed last year. That's where you get some of the stories. That's where you find out some good information, because if you have a scoop or something, you can't really do it on Zoom because then everybody else has it. So I'm really looking forward to kind of getting back in the room, so to speak, because not all teams are doing this. And that's the best way to kind of get acclimated and get to know some players, because it was a little disappointing that last year and never got to, you know, talk to, you know, Nate Schmidt face-to-face or Braden Holtby face-to-face. He never did it once. And I'm just looking forward to having, you know, it's not totally normal. Let's make that clear, but it is far more more normal this season than last season.
Murph, before we let you go and continue on your trek out to Abbotsford, we're going to go completely off the grid here, but we were talking about this last night. J.J. Redick, longtime NBA sharpshooter from beyond the arc, announced his retirement earlier this week. And as you teased it via text, I don't even know what this is all about, but there's a story involving J.J. Redick and Canucks play-by-play man John Shorthouse that you have in the chamber here.
I do. And since he retired, you know, of course, a great shooting guard from Duke, excellent career. The Canucks were in Dallas, and you know, I'm going to try to get the details right, but it's very close to this. I believe it was a game day, and our friend John Shorthouse was after the morning skate going over to a sandwich shop. I believe it was Potbelly's, to get himself some lunch. And while he was there, standing in line, waiting to place his order, the creep Shorty starts to eavesdrop on the people behind him, because he hears a guy saying, "I'm not happy. They know I'm not happy. I've told them that it's time. I'm an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season." You know, just some conversation from someone who's clearly a player in some sport, who's not happy with the situation and has asked out. And so Shorthouse, you know, glances around, takes a look, what the guy looks like, gets back to the room, gets on his computer, sees who the Mavericks are playing next, and the next day they're playing the Orlando Magic. He goes to their website, he goes through the players, and he sees that it's J.J. Redick. So he could have had a Woj bomb, because the next day, right after the game against the Dallas Mavericks, J.J. Redick was dealt in a multiplayer trade to the Milwaukee Bucks. So Shorty could have scooped everybody and all the insiders in the NBA if he only had a Twitter account, which he does not.
Right.
So that's my J.J. Redick story for today.
What a creep Shorty is.
Maybe it's good he's not on Twitter.
And one more thing.
Yes.
And one more thing. You know this whole Blue Jays pitching card thing?
Yeah. The stolen data card.
This is similar, but not quite the same. When the Canucks were in Winnipeg, I always get these little studios, and sometimes it's kind of weird. It's a second change room or something like that, you know, where they put my equipment and monitors and stuff. So I was in the Manitoba Mooses visiting team, AHL teams. No, I was in the Moose's dress room. So, I went to, as the Greek freak would say, take a tinkle. And above the urinals, they had the scouting reports for the opposing goaltenders that night or the night before, whenever the game was. So when the players went into the washroom, they could check out the weaknesses of the opposing team's goaltenders. So I thought that was kind of cool on a similar vein.
We did. You remember this?
I thought all scouting reports were like, number one, pucks in deep.
Yeah.
Well, number two, yeah, exactly. Win the battles.
It's funny you mention that, because back when we were working for the Curtain blog, Ron Wilson was the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs at the time. And you know how I thought Babcock made it en vogue, but apparently it happened earlier. Putting the card over your mouth to cover what you're saying on the bench because you think the TV cameras might grab it. So Ron Wilson did that and had his card upside down. So we freeze framed the television, took a picture, and turned it upside down. And we're like, we thought it was going to be all this great strategy. It was like, check Brian Gionta. And, you know, be aware of Scott Gomez. It was I was like, what? Like, why did you need to write this down on a piece of paper in case you forgot? It was unbelievable, but it goes to show that sometimes these things aren't as advanced as we think they are.
That's why I always like those documentaries on behind-the-scenes coaches. Like, you're like, you think there's going to be some dramatic tactical change that they'll make if a team is losing, but it's really just him, like, basically, he might as well just be reading what people are saying off Twitter. Just like, you guys were terrible in that period. You guys better figure it out.
And even last year, just out of habit, the coaches have their masks on and they're still putting the cards up over their mouth.
That's right, too. Hey, Murph, I know you're on. I know you're going to drive out there. We'll let you focus on the road. Be well, be safe, get out to Abbotsford, okay? Enjoy training camp, and we will do this again next week.
You got it, boys. Have a great day.
Thank you. Dan Murphy on Sportsnet 650 was brought to you by Freeway Mazda, Canada's number one consumer-rated Mazda dealer.